Blog Talk Radio.
Nightmare.
It's Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you're listening to you with your host, Avenger Satanus, and the Beast.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm Beast Zeno, and this is my co-host, Avenger Satanus. Avenger, how the hell are you doing today, my man?
I'm doing good, as per usual. How are you doing?
Well, you know, I'm in this kind of paradoxical bliss, so I can't complain.
Why is it a paradox?
Oh, it's a paradox because it's coming to a complete understanding of myself, and I am a walking state of a paradox, I guess. So,
yeah. Well, I think most people feel that way.
I would agree with you, but it's nice to actually every once in a while reach back and touch that human side of myself again.
Oh, sure. I think, actually, the human race is a paradox because we're kind of like, with the potential of the gods, you know, wrapped up in this mortal shell, which is, you know, essentially we have both unlimited freedom, potentially, and yet we find ourselves utterly enslaved by the universe and the lesser gods of the earth and, you know, just the way of things.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, that kind of sucks that you threw that out right then, because that was actually building into some of the conversation that I wanted to go into today. So on that note, I guess...
I'll give you a fucker sometimes.
You what?
I said, yeah, well, I can be a fucker sometimes.
Yeah, well, can't we all?
Yeah.
Can't we all? There's a couple of little things I wanted to cover before we actually got into today's conversation, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure.
The first thing I'd like to do is point out that on the cultofcthulhu.net website, right now there is an interview up, an interview with Ariok, the guy who redesigned the website, and I think probably one of the most fascinating artists out there right now. So that would be the first thing. And I know you usually do those plugs, but I really loved the interview. And, you know, I'm real excited about the work that he's put in thus far to that website. So.
Yeah, I totally agree. Wow, it's like we changed places for a few moments.
Yeah, well, you know, that kind of happens, which actually leads me to yet another thing that I saw on the forum today, or it might have been last night that I saw it, but somebody was asking when you were going to actually elevate to the state of Popehood, and, you know, it really started kind of ringing in my head. I was like, well, wait a minute, he is already the Pine Pope. You know, he is already the Emerald Emissary of our admissions.
Right.
So,
And to my
knowledge, go ahead.
Cthulhu has never been called a pope before. I mean, that was his insertion in that forum post, is that Cthulhu was known as the Green Pope or the Emerald Pope or something like that. And that maybe one day I aspire to that position, but I think the first time I was ever called the Green Pope or the Slimy Green Pope or the Emerald Pope or something like that was the first time that was ever used. It was in reference to me, I think around the time that Cthulhu Cults, the book one of our Bible, came out. So if there's ever been a slimy green pope, then I guess that would be me. But then Ego Diabolus, our other priest of Relay, he came on there and he replied. And but he kind of took a different tack that, you know, that our religion probably doesn't need, you know, a pope figure like the Catholic Church has a pope.
But, sure. Well, I mean, interchangeably, what I think this guy was getting at, I think what he was getting at was Cthulhu is often referenced as the priest of priests.
Right.
The high priest of priests. And then that, I think, is where the Pope reference comes from. So.
Yeah. I think he was asking if I will one day put myself on the same level as Cthulhu. And while I'm still alive here on this earth, the answer to that would be no, because, you know, for all my awesomeness, I'm still only human, and at least part of me is. And that kind of precludes me from, you know, being like the great old ones themselves in all their power and glory. So, yeah, I don't expect to elevate myself up to the level or succeeding Cthulhu. But I don't mind being called a pope either, because, you know, I'm the way, and I am the, you know, the leader, the head guy of the Cthulhu cult. You know, I'm the founder and I'm the high priest. So it's up to me to, you know, make sure everything goes in the right direction. And that's what I try to do. Like, that's what a pope does, then I guess that makes me pope. Of that.
I agree. Your pine popeness is undeniable.
My what? My pine popeness?
Your pine popeness, yes.
Oh, as in pine green?
As in pine green, you've got it.
Oh, okay. The winter fresh pope.
Yes, 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 yes. The smell of the dead seasons is upon you.
Aw, that's the nicest thing anyone said to me all morning.
So, moving on to the next thing. I know that you've had this this knowledge of this troll that I've been playing with on my YouTube channel, and today he just totally cracked me up because he just does not fucking get it. It cracks me up because he doesn't understand how somebody can call themselves a part of an organization and not be a follower of that organization. It's the way that the we structure ourselves within the Cthulhu cult is pretty obvious in my eyes. It's not about this, you know, legion of groveling, begging slaves, or, you know, and submitting to your emerald will. It's a coalition of people. I'm sorry?
I said, ooh, I like the sound of that.
Yeah. It's a coalition of people who have come to the same terms on their own, and then found resonance within what you've said. You know, it's an awakening, or a pre-awakening, shall we say? Of
I like that too, a pre-awakening. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pre-awakening, a realization in sorts of. You know, the way that things really are, and then, you know, you look around and you realize that unless you build numbers, you can do nothing to change this.
Right, right.
You know, so
we do have another caller, but for a moment, I'd like to address what Beast, you know, had to say. But first, finish what you were saying, Beast.
Basically, I was just saying that rather than calling us, you know, followers, that in fact the way that you've presented yourself is one that we're all trudging along the exact same path and kind of a parallel line versus falling into some kind of horizontal or perpendicular thing where we need to actually intervene. Not intervene, but fall behind you. it's more of trudging alongside you. Instead of carving one groove, we're scraping the entire surface.
Right. Well, yeah, I would say, I think that's very well said. I would say that we should take another look at and perhaps reevaluate the word follower. I mean, a lot of people that, you know, that think of that word like, oh, you're a follower, you know, it has a very pejorative connotation to it, which basically means that people see it in a negative light, just like people see or hear the word cult, and they immediately start thinking like, oh my God, you know, people hold up on some compound, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid, wearing weird things, you know, being told to wake up at 5 a.m. and start chanting, and then ritual suicide in the afternoon, you know, things like that. But our version of cult, and, you know, perhaps to some, our interpretation of the word follower, you know, it's not like a lot of the rest of the world see it. You know, when someone says that they're following me, you know, like you said, Beast, I don't see them, you know, groveling at my feet and, like, you know, I just tell people to go mow my lawn and then they do it because I'm their master. Rather, you know, people see the direction I'm going in and, you know, they want to follow my footsteps, or they want to follow the same path that I'm at, or, you know, they allow me to lead the organization they're a part of. And in that way, you know, technically, I guess maybe they're a follower if I am a leader. But it's not a follower in the pejorative sense. It's not like, you know, you're a sheep or something, or a person doesn't have any will or ideas of their own. It's a different kind of following. You know, and I follow, you know, the will and the path that the old ones tread. Does that make
sure,
me a follower? You know, and perhaps, you know, perhaps Yog-Sothoth follows the cues of Dread Cthulhu. And perhaps Dread Cthulhu follows, or perhaps even worships, the formless black essence. You know, does that make Cthulhu a follower? You know, and in one sense, I guess, because, you know, he's following the lead of maybe something greater or something higher. You know, something which leads him, you know, if you hear a call, then to go to that, I guess, would be following that call.
I would agree,
of slavery or something like that, or submission.
I would agree, but I would even put it in a different sense. I would put it in the sense that, like, you follow the TV show Lost.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
It's a keeping up with what's going on within a particular phenomenon that's occurring.
Yeah.
It's not, in a sense, you know, calling it a cut and dry. Like in Christianity, they have a cut and dry a tenet that they have to follow.
Right. They are. Yeah, they're followers. And, you know, they're sheep, and I guess maybe Jesus Christ, and it depends on the religion. He's the shepherd, and, you know, he's, not, I guess, not only the leader, but he's, you know, I don't know. That's kind of getting into a whole other area, and each branch of Christianity is different, so it's almost ridiculous to try to define any particular value set of Christianity, because they're all so different, and, you know, they're all trying to kill each other, you know, at least in some parts of the world, so it doesn't even make any goddamn sense. But anyway, we do have another caller. I'm not good with identifying numbers to names, so...
Well, I know who it is. I'll announce them.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Oh, it would happen to be the infamous Ego Diabolus.
Yeah, hey guys, I don't think the Cult of Cthulhu has followers. What we have are participants. Every person participates voluntarily. They're participating in a process that's guided by Vendor Satanus and the dictates of the Cult of Cthulhu. But they participate voluntarily. They participate at the level they choose to participate at, and the level that their skills and talents allow them to participate at. What's that?
I said it's guided by you guys as well. I mean, as Priests of Relay, both of you are, you know, in definitely a leadership position in the cult.
Right.
And that person would look up to you and follow, you know, your lead, you know, maybe as much, if not more, in some cases, than myself. So, and I agree, it's more of a participatory thing. But I think what started this was, you know, someone came up to the Beast Nino's YouTube channel and, you know, called him like, hey, you're just a follower. You know, you're just following this guy. And, I mean, we can have our own language for things like, you know, active participation and things like that instead of following. But, you know, people are going to come up to us or people are going to write on our page or email us and be like, hey, you know, why are you such a follower? And, you know, you're never entirely going to get rid of that word. But if you just enlighten people to, you know, the wider meaning of what it is, then, I don't know, hopefully that goes towards making people see that, you know, the Cthulhu cult isn't like Christianity, and it isn't like Islam and Judaism and things like that, where it's based on, like a
Draconian
hierarchy, and exactly, submission and slavery, and, you know, one person's will supplanting another. It's about, like, cooperation and communication and participation and, you know, trying collectively to achieve certain goals that otherwise going it alone would be almost impossible.
Awesome. All right, so we've wasted about 18 minutes here, and I'm sure everybody is dying to hear something about objective reality. So the first thing that I was actually thinking is necessary for us to hold this conversation is we need to come up with a clear definition of what we mean by objective reality. Because
I got that
awesome. I have one definition of my own as well. So what I was hoping we would do is just decide what definition it is that we're discussing. And then from there, it should make it easier to articulate and transpond the information.
Right. And for those who don't know, this topic, this two-part topic, which will be concluded at next week's episode of the Ooze, it all began on the Cult of Cthulhu forum. And, I mean, it's a pretty hot thread. There's two pages, probably 25 posts, or maybe more, from many different people on objective reality and how it differs from subjective reality. Anyway, it's a very fascinating discussion. If anyone's listening, I hope you are. Hopefully you'll go back to the original objective reality thread in the cults forum and take a look at that, read through it, you know, post your own thoughts because it, you know, that discussion was so awesome in many senses of the word. That Beast and I felt like it required more coverage on the Ooze, our Left Hand Path Talk radio show. And that's why we're talking about it now. So, yes. Ego Diabolos and Beast, you know, yes, please take it away.
All right, Jay, I'll let you go first.
Okay. My opinion, my definition for objective reality would be reality minus perception. Reality as it exists without a mental presence to observe it and define it.
And that's too funny because that's almost exactly what I was going to say. Objective reality is the physical element less the actual experience of it. So, you know, not the touch, not the taste, not the feel, not the smell. None of those things are objective about that reality. They're perceptual. So we both agree upon that.
I was going to go with
no,
grape juice.
Go ahead.
Nothing. That was just
you're
my little.
Go with what?
Grape juice.
Grape juice.
That was just my little surrealism bit of funniness. Never mind.
Well, what I think is interesting about those definitions, we operate through our perceptions, so objective reality becomes impractical based on those definitions. That you can think to manipulate objective reality, but it's always going to be manipulating it through some sort of subjective layer.
But then how can any kind of objective reality exist unless it's somehow observed in some way by something or someone?
There's no scientific basis for objective reality because science is a matter of using human tools and human perceptions to define things.
So in that case, do you think we should be talking about the closest thing we can come to objective reality? Or that,
I think that's all
that includes perception? Or should we talk about the sort of imaginary, hypothetical objective reality that can't ever be fully understood or defined or perceived?
I'm going to have to step out of here and say that I do not agree with that. Objective reality, as I've come to understand it, is certainly definable through science. As a matter of fact, through particle wave theory. Now, this is the thing about particle wave theory. Sometime in the 1800s, there was a cat who did an experiment called the double slit experiment. What he did was he took photons and he launched it at a board which had two slits in it. And on the backside of that board, behind there, was some kind of a paper for measuring. Now, the importance of this really comes in the actual process rather than what happened. But the appearance behind it was a wave pattern. And it didn't matter if you covered one hole or the other, or if you left them both open, you still had this wave pattern that happened on the other side. So in absence of having the polarity, the photon still created a wave pattern as if there was something non-existent on the other side still pulling on it. So what this means in consciousness is that there is something outside of our measurable sense. There is something there. It's just undefinable to us because everything that we experience is filtered through five functions.
Okay. Well, I think that's a very great and profound discovery. I don't know whether it fully addresses, or tells us one way or another about what ego was talking about that objective reality, is beyond human perception and can't really ever be qualified or quantified.
To finish what I was saying, the thing of it is that we begin to realize that objective reality is the absence of everything that's perceptive. And so it does give it somewhat of a definition. It's just a definition that's beyond human comprehension. For instance, if you had no...
Go ahead.
I'm agreeing with it. I'm just saying that there is a science that covers it. There is a way to understand it. Objective reality, in my opinion, is very voidial. It's completely the absence of everything.
Well, I think you can take any bit of science and any experiment and by seeing the truth of a very small part of reality or the universe, I think from that you can extrapolate the fact that there's a lot we don't know, and there's laws, forces, and things going on that, you know, are outside the scope of our experiment and the scope of our reasoning and understanding. And I know that experiments, you know, with the particle and the wave, and it depends on who's observing at the same time. I still don't think that fully explains, you know, if the objective reality that we're talking about today, the one that we can utilize, is that hypothetical, or is it something real and more or less concrete that we can actually affect change on?
Well, hopefully we'll get to this today, and I agree with you that there's certainly a huge level of uncertainty in that. One of the things that I wanted to bring up today, and I'm trying to get the stuff out that I wanted to bring up today in hopes that, you know, it'll fuel for maybe something a little more profound than what I've already discovered. Jason King has this theory about Dharmakaya and it being the totality of everything. And he uses this example of a number line, 0 and then -1, 1, 2, -2, and so forth and so on, going infinitely in each direction. And he then gives this statement that as you move across this number line, you're creating constrictors, which are perception, which skew and warp the entire perception of what is actually objective reality. Now, he makes this statement, and I think the name of the video is Ex Nihilo. He makes this statement in there, and he explains it as being an organized system of nothingness. And I know that sounds ludicrous, but in some ways it fits perfectly with what we're talking about, because nothingness in that sense then still is a thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's just a thing with no description.
Right.
And also, particle wave collapsing, that actually, in quantum mechanics, that actually gives a lot of rational basis to what Jason's saying, because it's also how they came up with the idea when they're looking at, like, the double slit theory and stuff, that the observation itself causes this collapse of the particle wave. And the reason I say this is because if you think about how all of our senses operate, they do not operate unless they have they come up against some kind of obstruction. There's something pushing up against it. Like, your eyes wouldn't see anything if there was nothing to see. It wouldn't stop at that point and begin to develop shape, you know, like sonar does. The way that sonar works, it sends a signal down, and then based upon what obstructs it, it's able to develop a shape to it.
If you think about it, let me stop you there. That's a great metaphor for for the work and the fourth way and, you know, the whole engine of the Cthulhu cult, where things don't really become real or become defined or understandable until we meet up with conflict and struggle and part of us chafes against some other part of us. Just like you can't see certain molecules or, you know, waves or particles and things like that unless they come up against some sort of obstacle. So it is the same with people and their essence or their soul. It can't be recognized or felt unless it comes up against an obstacle or some sort of conflict or struggle, hopefully some sort of inner struggle. because I think that creates the most profound change. I just thought that was very interesting, the correlation between those two things.
That completely leads into what my current belief, which is that everything is absolutely interconnected, and in a way that we can't even begin to separate ourselves from things. All we can do, and with doing being kind of a pun, is just choose what influences us or what conflict we come into, and hope that that will shape the actual manifestation of our own personal paradigms.
Yeah. That system of belief, I think I'm an agnostic. I don't know if I believe or I disbelieve, or I think it's possible that everything is interconnected, and I guess that means that it's all part of one great whole. But I don't fully know. I'm not going to commit to one way or another. I like the idea, and I think it's possible, but I'm not going to definitely say yes or no. But that's my own personal, backing away from that huge.
Right. I can understand that. It's only through my own personal observations in life that I can even say that I wholeheartedly subscribe to it. So, again, it's all about, what you perceive.
I think what we're talking about with objective reality, we could also be talking about original influence. And in that way, I mean, nothing escapes if there were rays of light, nothing escapes the light of original influence. So even if we lack a connection at our two points with under that ray of light, we're still being influenced by that same original influence. We're still subject to that. And in that way, that we achieve an interconnectivity.
Right. I think, being that I've, had my study within Gurdjieff and within Ouspensky, and not that I'm a master of either, but, possibly more so than most, but anyway, I think that they would completely agree with what I'm saying, and I think that's the whole point behind their lessons in doing and happening and consideration. I think that the whole point of it is that we are, in fact, all part of this larger system, whether we want to accept it or not. There's nothing wrong with grabbing hold of our individuality within it and locking ourselves off in this particularly in this constricted confine, because that's how perception works. But if you remove the element of perception, the only thing that is stopping functioning within this objective reality is you. That's why breaking out of this prison by yourself would be practically impossible.
See, what I'm trying to be mindful of is a separate and opposing or possibly competing system that that has a holistic totality that's completely separate from the one we know or the one we're talking about. And then when that merges with us in our reality, in our universe, what the hell happens then? Does that cause some of the conflict? Does that cause some of the paradox in the self that we were talking about at the top of the show? I guess I'm talking about the old ones and Universe B and the adversarial occurrence.
That's exactly it. I mean, I would say that
is
thing that
conflict?
You're speaking about is
yeah.
the conflict.
So, but then doesn't that go against your idea of, everything being part of the whole? Or do you see those two systems as part of one larger whole?
I see those two systems as part of one larger whole, one that we really don't comprehend. you know, there are people that seek to achieve. There are people that are happy just, you know, going with the flow. And by default, we can really only be what we are. You know, no,
but, you know,
we can always change that.
Right. You can always lump things together. Like, you know, you can take apples and oranges and put them in the same basket and be like, oh, this is one whole. You know, I'm putting the apples and the oranges together. But
right.
Are they really integrated?
Absolutely.
I think there are certain points of intersection, but possibly they're two totally separate, you know, things removed from each other. They're not integrated. Sometimes they meet at certain points and create disturbances, maybe, in objective reality. But I don't think the adversarial current and this oppositional force and, you know, the great old ones, the universe be, you know, the dark side of the tree of life, I don't think all that is integrated and interconnected with what we're dealing with and our normal human experience and in this universe and the lesser gods of the earth and, you know, normal human behavior. I think those things are separate, but I could be wrong.
I would say, and this really doesn't go into conflict necessarily with what you're saying, but it's just a different view. Just like when you start into categorizing animals in science, you know, you start with this large category, animals, and then you break it down by, you know, different species, and then you break it down by different genus and so forth and so on. That's what's going on here. You're talking about categories on a deeper look, but at the same time, it might be the reverse. You know, where what I'm talking about is the totality of everything, and that includes experience as well as its opposite, the objective. By default, we're logical machines, and so by default, we experience all things in categories.
Right.
It's inescapable, and so we're talking about the same thing. Just the question is, where does that division happen? Where does the division between objective and subjective reality happen? And that, it really gets to the root of how to change it. Because once you understand something, you can make change to it.
Sometimes. Not necessarily, but I agree that understanding it is half the battle to making change. Now, if human beings aren't capable of fully conceiving or perceiving objective reality, does that mean that some sort of God or divine being is capable of that?
My thoughts on this are that hasn't happened yet. That rather than us being a deconstruction, as has been pushed in many years past in different areas of philosophy, rather than there actually being a fall of Lucifer, so to speak, this is actually the rise of it. So is there something out there that can perceive it at the moment? I don't believe so.
Okay. Ego Diabolos, what's your opinion?
I think that objective reality, in order for it to be objective reality, defies perception. So no matter what level of intellect,
right?
What's that?
But you're talking about human perception, or you just mean
not perception?
Any possible. So even the godlike, you know, perception that would be normally not understandable by us and beyond our comprehension, even that kind of perception, you think, is
still limited.
Not able to fully capture, you know, the totality of an objective reality.
Well, because the nature of perception means perceiving something through some sort of transport mechanism, whether it's an eye, whether it's your finger, or in whatever it is for God, whether it's, you know, divine awareness or whatever. So the innate characteristics of the being perceiving objective reality changes what is perceived. So they may come to a closer realization of what objective reality is than we do, if at that level of perception, but it's still not objective reality because objective reality defies perception. It's the reality of objective out perception.
But can't a God, either an actual God or a hypothetical God, who transcends all things, can he be at that transcendental level where that God could be, you know, fully aware of objective reality?
I would have to go on this myself and say that no. And I think that Jason and I are both talking about the exact same thing.
I think so. I would disagree, though. I have a contrary, which is okay, obviously. But I think that's kind of one of the definitions of, you know, God, is that he can look outside of reality and see it in an objective way, whether that is seeing every conceivable subjective reality and then piece it together and then unraveling it all to see every facet of it, every aspect, what's there, what's not there. Or maybe you can see it all at once and know every single dimension and level and layer within, you know, the objective reality, in all the smaller subjective realities.
If you had two gods with this capability of viewing objective reality, if they viewed objective reality at any time from two different perspectives, then they would have created a paradox, because then you'd have two objective realities, because each perspective would be different. Unless
I would
they
even
have the ability
go
along
further. In what you're saying there, and what I would say is that at this point, when you have something perceiving at all and experiencing at all, it automatically fragments it in a dimensional fraction. It can't be the totality, because experience is a dimensional thing. So
I agree that it seems very illogical and paradoxical. However, that, again, to me, is one of, you know, the rare qualities of being a god, is that all those things that seemingly can't be are somehow reconciled in the divinity of that entity.
Well,
I could buy into that.
Right?
I'm getting ready to say the same thing, Jason, is that when you put it in that aspect, it seems completely and totally plausible.
Right. I mean, it is very implausible, and the fact that we can't ever know such a thing ourselves kind of makes it very theoretical and almost semantics. So, but I just wanted to put that out there because I thought it was an interesting topic of discussion, or side topic.
Well, and I would think that God would have to be the totality of all things plus the awareness of all things. So it would be unique.
Maybe. But actually something resonated with what you said, Ego, just a few minutes ago, that if you had two separate gods and they were seeing things from different angles, you know, that would create, you know, a paradox or fragmentation or something, and you know, perhaps that's why reality is as quote unquote weird as it is, and that perhaps that's why there's what I would call or define as universe A and universe B, universe B being wherever the old ones lurk. And you know, maybe there's, you know, there's the demiurge from this universe, and then the formless black essence from some other opposing universe. And I don't know, maybe this world we live in is the battleground for both of those adversarial visions of objective reality.
Well, by that way of thinking, though, don't you kind of end up with two different subjective realities, one reality defined by the demiurge of this paradigm and one reality formed by the formless black essence, where everything else is subjective to one or the other?
Yes, that's true. If I went down that road, then that would kind of, destroy my previous argument. But I'm not saying that that's not possible. In that case, there would be, I guess, two different objective realities, or maybe coexisting, coterminous objective realities. I guess that would be the struggle between good and evil. And one side can't see the other's point of view. I don't know.
It's Pandora's box, man.
And as we push for definitions of objective reality or whether or not objective reality can be influenced, my thing would be, and I don't know if I brought this up in the forum or not, but it might be worthwhile just to be aware of the various subjective realities, that the fact that the what we're perceiving isn't necessarily the reality of things, but that our awareness of that illusion gives us the ability to manipulate things within it.
Yeah,
so it might be more important to develop
that.
The skills to manipulate subjective realities rather than try to manipulate the objective reality.
Right.
Well, but I think
The benefit of seeing the different subjective realities and then, you know, altering that and, you know, in order to get what you want, in order to change your life, you know, or the world around you to make it better, to make it more in accordance with your will.
All right. Let me pose something to you guys, okay? All right, because what I think, there was some discussion about primal coding and changing the objective reality. What I think about the objective reality is that it cannot exist without the subjective layers. And so by default, when we do manipulate the subjective realities and the layers of subjective reality, the objective reality has to take that shape. Objective reality would be viewed as a raw piece of molding clay. And it's only through, you know, placing your hands on it and squeezing and tugging and pushing and scratching that it takes form, it takes shape. It could be viewed in the same sense as a circuit board and a computer even. You know, it by itself is nothing, but when you add that power to it, that's when, you know, the miracle of it happens. You know,
right.
Objective reality, totality is useless.
Right. I agree with that part of the statement, that objective reality, since it's the absence of perception, it may as well not exist, and that the only thing that matters at that point is subjective reality. But I don't think that you can reach through subjective reality and manipulate objective reality, because objective reality, again, it exists beyond definition. It exists without perception. So all you'd be doing is manipulating deeper levels of subjective reality, not the objective reality itself.
All right. Okay. Hold on. Go ahead. All right. One quick second here, because I want to give you an example of objective reality being manipulated through subjective reality. All right. Prior to the 1800s, there was no craft, no vehicle that could enter the sky and fly.
Okay, I know where you're going with this. You mentioned it on the forum, the fact that you had a whole airplane. But see, what I would say is that it actually leads into what I was going to say. What you're doing is you're creating like a middle ground between subjective and objective reality, which is just a set of stronger and linked concepts of subjective reality. Instead of the subjective reality of one individual, you've got, it's stronger because there's just more of it, quantity and quality, with the energy that's being put into it. Basically, you've got an identical, or at least identical in aspects, subjective reality of like 1,000 different people that believe in one thing. So, it's not really objective. It's not truly subjective because it's not just subject to one. It's, somewhere in the middle. And that I think we can work with, and that I think we can, touch on and manipulate and affect through black magic, which is, the whole point of this little exercise, I guess.
Certainly.
I think the argument I would make with the idea that prior to the first vehicle for flight, that objective reality was that flight was impossible. Okay, I don't know if that's where you were going with that example or not.
No, actually, what I was actually getting to is something a little more simple. The object itself did not exist.
What object?
The plane.
The airplane?
But the forces that would manipulate that plane existed. The dynamics and the examples of the things that would lead to the plane existed.
Which was why I used the pottery example in the first place.
Right. Yeah. No, I know what you're saying. We're all on the same page, I think.
I wouldn't disagree with that at all. We are all on the same page because I believe that that is the case.
Right. So what can we do to, to affect a greater scope of subjective reality that, will actually be meaningful to us and that we can actually change and work on?
Well, I think that's where the work comes in is, observing the self, recognizing the different influences that are outside yourself may have been passive towards before, and being more active in how you deal with those influences. And then like TC's been saying, then picking and choosing your influences so that you begin to manipulate your subjective reality. Into whatever you're going for, whatever your aim happens to be.
Right.
Awesome. Holy shit, that hour flew by.
I'm trying to get my computer back up. Are we almost out of time or what?
Five minutes, man.
Okay. All right, quickly. So I didn't get a chance to read your last post, Ego. But basically, my last post was saying that, is there an effective difference between owning your own subjective reality, tailor making it by your design, and reaching some some, you know, level of objective reality, or at least getting as close as we can, and manipulating that, which is extremely difficult, as, you know, as anyone knows. So yeah, maybe the answer is to just, you know, work with your own reality and change that, and then, you know, live as if that were true, as if that were objective reality, and, you know, make everybody else play your game, I suppose.
The short version of my answer on the in the forum was that it depends on your aim. If your aim can be satisfied through your personal reality, then by all means, use your personal reality. But if you find that you're not achieving your aim through manipulating your own personal subjective reality or even the subjective reality of others, then you have to dig deeper if you're going to achieve that aim.
Right. So the closer you the closest you can get to that is as close as you can get to objective reality without actually experiencing that totality.
Right. I think that most desires, most aims that we have wouldn't require a change in the fabric of reality, the objective reality. That it just means it would just be a localized change, whatever influences us.
But aren't there different levels of localized change? Like, let's say, let's say you have some sort of lust ritual or something that you perform, and then coincidentally, you know, sometime in the next week, you meet some girl or boy or whatever, and you have, you know, you carry on a sexual relationship that's satisfying. You know, haven't you, in a way, altered objective reality? You know, the primal coding. You know, that person existed before, but now they're in your life and you're actually physically interacting with them, and anyone with eyes or senses can see or perceive it. Haven't you affected, more than subjective
the totality?
Change?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know.
I think so.
That's the thing. I think
that's the best answer.
I don't know if that's.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know that objective reality has been changed, but definitely there's several layers of reality that have come into, to coincide that allow all that to happen. I guess my thing would be like, well, let's say you don't like the flavor of beer and you want to change the flavor of beer, you know. You can try to deal with it on your own, just get used to the flavor of beer, but if that doesn't work for you, then you have to start tinkering with the beer itself. And then you have to convince people at different bars and everything else to serve your tinkered with beer that's more to your taste.
Yeah.
So you begin to deal with other subjective realities beyond just your perception.
Right.
Now, real quick, because we've just got a few seconds left, but this actually goes completely into what I was talking about on the forum about the anthill. Each person's level of necessity, level of need, and interaction within the objective reality is completely and totally subjective to the experiencer. And so that goes completely towards what Jason's saying and what I was trying to explain with the concept of self-actualization is becoming everything that you wanted to be and everything that you could be. Some people couldn't be happy being a sheep. Other people have to be the leader.
Okay.
So,
well,
maybe that
should be the start of our next discussion into objective reality for next week.
Awesome.
Because I definitely have things to say on, the aspect of self-actualization. Hopefully our listeners do too. So people can comment in, post in the forum. They can write to us. They can call in next week. And then we'll talk about, we'll just continue the discussion.
Cool. Thanks, guys. It's been a fucking awesome show, and we got like 10 seconds, so.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, everybody. It's been awesome. Right on. Okay. Talk to you guys next week, man.
Later.